Wait for it, wait for it, and we're live. Hey, all you crazy sci-fi and fantasy fans, it's time for your daily dose of shenanigans over here at the Blasters and Blades podcast. Just a couple of nerdy veterans and one absentee chaos coordinator geeking out over our science fiction passions and fantastical fantasies. A place where magic is king, the sky is the limit, and space is the place. We are the podcast that puts the fun in dysfunction. So, without further ado, Nick, I have to ask you, you got a second?
Yeah.
Is there any truth to the rumor that Stabby couldn't make it today because she was teaching the boy a thing or two about Nerf and sweeping buildings?
Yes.
Okay. Did you need help hiding the body parts? Do I need to fly out?
No, it was Nerf. It was good.
I mean, I know people that put darts in crap at the end of a Nerf gun. It could be done. I'm just saying.
With no. We don't play that stuff because everybody in this house has like no... you know, line in the sand as far as how far they're willing to go for escalation and fire superiority. It's like, I've told the kid, I'm like, don't ambush me with the Nerf gun. Cause I'll get Mr. 45. I'll bring you the spicy Nerf. You know,
I like spicy Nerf.
He's like, do you want to do that? He's like, would you do that? I'm like, in a heartbeat, you frustrate me so much.
All right. Now that we've talked about spicy Nerf guns and sweeping buildings, if you don't know what that is, look it up. You'll thank us later. Dennis, Mr. Dennis Robinson, can you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Hello. So yeah, my name is Dennis Robinson. It's my second time on the show. I'm super excited to be back. Thanks for having me again. Let me talk about all my stuff and whatnot, and then learn new terminology in terms of warfare and military stuff and all that jazz. So I only know a few little things just because of my siblings that were, you know, in it and whatnot, but not a whole lot rubbed off.
There are so many jokes there, but we're family friendly.
I know. I said it, and the moment the words left my mouth, I was like, God damn it.
I do like that all the time. Open mouth, insert foot. That is my MO.
Yep. There was a anybody ever watch Modern Family when it was on?
Yes, I remember.
Clips.
Mr. Duh. Yeah. There was an intro, because they'll do that little intro where they're talking to the family, whatever. And Mr. Duffy, I just remember his last name. He's like, Claire got a tattoo, so I can get a tattoo. And I was thinking about what... And he, as soon as the words left his mouth, he's like,
oh, you know,
she's like, do you know what you just said? He's like, yeah, I got it. How about this? He's like, oh no, that's worse. Yeah. He was going to get a tattoo on the small of his back. That was going to say all in or
take it deep or something. Or
yeah. Go deeper.
Deeper. He was trying. Yeah. Something.
Just, and as soon as it left his mouth, you just see the look on his face. He's like, oh God, that's bad. Okay. No, I got it. Then he would say something else. He's like, oh my God, that's even worse. Yeah.
I have did it. Well, not live on air because we don't have that many live shows, but we were recording an episode with a former tanker officer and I was trying to give him grief. It hasn't aired yet when you watch this one, dear listener. And I made the mistake of telling him he couldn't get it up. And it didn't mean it in that context. And Nick is trying to keep a straight face and not spit his booze out of his mouth because, you know, we do make fun of tankers all the time.
I lost that battle so hard. I turned my camera off.
I was just like, ooh. And then I tried to save it, and you inevitably make it worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sometimes you're better off just grinning and pretending you meant to say that.
Yep. Just let it go.
Yeah. Let the fumble just fumble, man.
Yep.
All right. So the next part of the introduction, dear listener, is how we first found them. So he came back to came to us way back in season two with his first Kickstarter of one of his graphic novels. And so when he was launching again, another Kickstarter for another project in that universe, he thought of coming back and we're glad he did. And here we are. And last time you suckered a bunch of money out of Nick. I mean, you earned a commission when you bought your book. And so let's see if Nick can stay strong and not throw $100 million at the wall today.
Well, I just got a new place. So I am what they call house poor now.
It's fair. It's fair. Fair.
All right. So
I might just get the one physical copy.
There you go.
So we've changed the religion questions up a little bit. So you get to answer them all again. All right.
Okay.
Not exactly the same. So
all right.
Star Wars, Star Trek, or Firefly?
Oh, man. That's I'm going to. Oh, man. Firefly, just because the entirety of Firefly is good. I like parts of Star Wars and parts of Star Trek. Like Next Gen, love Next Gen. Yeah, the rest of it, yeah.
How do you feel about Enterprise? Star Trek Enterprise. I like that one.
You know, I never did see Enterprise with Scott Bakula, right?
Yeah, the Quantum Leap guy.
Yeah, I was going to say Quantum Leap was my jam when I was growing up. So.
Me too, and MacGyver. I had a
MacGyver.
Don't ever do that, kids. My parents told me it looked stupid, so I grew it longer, of course, as you do. And now I look at pictures, and I'm like, Mom, why didn't you make me cut it? Because it's a rite of passage to look like an idiot. I'm like, okay.
We have a farm show not too far from where I live every year. It's a big thing. And they apparently have a mullet competition every year, which I just found out about, where hundreds of people grow their mullets out to determine who's got the best mullet. So it's a thing.
That's kind of like when we do No Shave November.
Yes.
So we'll shave, but the goal is to grow the rattiest, stash. Like, it has to be so bad that you're not allowed within 500 feet of a school.
Oh, yeah. I can't have a mustache. Every time I grow a mustache, I'm just like, whoop, that's a pedophile right there. Okay, well, can't go anywhere.
I look like, what the hell is his name from? Oh, my God, I'm drawing a blank. Ron Swanson. I look like Ron Swanson. So when I go to the stash, because I'll get tired of the beard, that's when I go into my Ron Swanson phase, and I'll do a post on on social media with a Ron Swanson quote with a picture of me in the stash. So
that's fantastic.
I had like 55 quotes.
Ron Swanson, you know, that's a
guy. I want to dye my hair red so I can go as Rhett Foreman. Fat, dumb, and stupid is no way to go through life, son. I relate to that guy so hard now.
That's fair.
That's the kind of dad
I tell the boy.
Aspire to be.
I tell the boy, like, dude, you came into my life when I was way past my Danny Tanner phase of parenting.
Mm-hmm.
You have entered the Red Foreman phase where I will put my foot in your ass.
One day, I want to be able to say we could experience the Red Dawn / Patriot phase where we get to tell them, aim small, miss small, now kill the Redcoats. Sadly, we missed that by a couple hundred years, so what are you going to do?
I believe in reincarnation. I may have been there. I don't know.
It's true.
Yeah, the one thing about reincarnation that always amuses me is when you hear people talk about it, everyone was like the Queen of England or this famous person. You don't ever hear anybody was like, yeah, I was a horse thief, or, you know, I cleaned the shitter.
The muck farmer.
The muck farmer. Nobody ever says that.
No, I would probably say that. If I could remember past lives, I'd be like, yeah, I was just some dumb grunt.
Yeah.
They picked me off the street. I was conscripted to fight whatever, you know?
Damn.
Yeah, I mean, we romanticize a lot of lost causes. So, I mean, like, I'd be like, cool. It'd be cool if they told me I was at Culloden and died. That'd be a cool past life, you know?
Maybe
Rodney Cromwell, just because.
The past lives stuff has always been interesting, but I've never actually sat down and thought, like, what are some past lives that I would like that would have been interesting to like sort of reincarnate as? I would definitely never want to have been. I don't want to be like any of the famous people. I'd rather be just like a generic or like a blacksmith for some reason. Like, I really dig blacksmith. Like, I've got a buddy who's a blacksmith, and I'm like, that'd be really dope to be.
Blacksmith historically is twofold. One, it's dangerous because, you know, you're wearing hot things and you could burn yourself. Sure. But the other hand, it's one of the safest jobs because even when you raid a village, who's the person you don't kill? The blacksmith, because then you can make him work for you instead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As a guy, mostly they're going to kill you and take your women and children. But if you're the blacksmith, you might be the one they let live.
That is true.
I'm pretty sure in every past life, I was the guy without the name tag. So there was no chance I was surviving. You know, it's like they gave me the shortest sword at the Battle of Hastings, you know.
That was the iconic Forrest Gump movie where he's like, I had a lot to live for, and it's Lieutenant Dan's family all dying one after another in combat. Yep. That's Nick's past life.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So the next
back on topic.
Because we were polytheistic here at the Game of Thrones, at the Blast from Blades podcast, Game of Thrones, Wheel of Time, or Chronicles of Narnia?
Game of Thrones minus the last season.
That's valid.
I hate that last season.
All right. Now, this is one I know you didn't answer. See, the fantasy one, we changed up some of the shows in there. This one you have never answered before, but it's going to blow your mind. Are you ready for this, sir?
I am trying to prepare my mind.
This is the second time we've used this question. What is your favorite dinosaur?
Brachiosaurus was my favorite dinosaur.
It's an acceptable answer.
Yeah, I don't know why. When I was a kid, I always loved, like, the big, long-necked, like gigantic dinosaurs. Like for like, I didn't really gravitate towards the raptors or the, I mean, not the velociraptors really look like they do in Jurassic Park anyways, but
no, or about the size of a chicken.
Yeah.
Or, like, your lion mouth.
Or anything like that. Like I never really gravitated towards that stuff. I always liked the big giant plant eating, you know, dinosaurs for whatever reason.
Is it because the land is super fine?
You know what? It was probably because of Littlefoot. It was probably because of that. And I'm shocked.
Introduction to my childhood trauma right there.
Yeah.
That and the never ending story.
Made movies different back when we were kids where literally it was just, yeah, no, you ready for some trauma? Let's get some trauma.
Yeah. I'm going to introduce these characters that you're going to fall in love with and then I'm going to kill them.
Yes. That sounds like my books.
I'm okay with that. All right. And because we are civilized human beings now, we are no longer knuckle dragging troglodytes. Coffee or tea? And how do you take it?
Tea. And I would say I take it with some honey and lemon.
What kind of tea do you like to drink? Follow-up question.
Typically, like a chamomile or something like that. Usually I only drink tea when I'm like sick. Like when I'm sick, I drink a dumb amount of tea. I have a giant Bubba mug and it's got like 8 tea bags in it. And it's just
So they overdosed us on steroids or cortisol to keep us in the field. I was in Iraq. So they were giving us a shot in each knee once a week just to keep us in the field. Yeah. When you get in that many automobile accidents, it's not good for your body. And that's how you clear a road. You just play bumper cars and you ram them off. And so when I got back, eventually when they weaned me off all of that after a couple of years, the doctor was like, you got to protect your liver. So over-the-counter meds are hard on your body, you know, prescribed meds, right? So if you could find, what do you call them? If you could find non-medical ways to treat things, that's better. Homeopathic.
Holistic.
Yeah.
So I drink a lot of, when I feel sick, I'll drink a lot of peppermint tea with local honey. And the local honey is helps with your allergens. They actually have done research into the Vikings, and one of the reasons they were so much bigger than other people, it wasn't because, oh my God, I'm afraid of them, so they look bigger because it's justified. They were legitimately taller, and part of that, they think, was all the mead because it was honey-based. So it was keeping them from getting as sick.
Okay.
So that was my doctor told me is local honey and peppermint tea is the way to go.
Huh. I had recently looked up, it was like, I didn't know this was a thing at Starbucks apparently, because I don't really go to Starbucks, but they have a thing called a medicine ball. Never and somebody, Wait, so it's like,
ball means a different thing where I grew up.
Yeah. Well, yeah, me too. But apparently it's like half lemonade, half hot water. And then it's a bag of chamomile. And then I forget the other type of tea and then some honey and that's it. That's all it is. And apparently it's supposed to like be a big immune system.
That sounds delicious, actually.
Yeah. So I'm like, I don't want to get sick, but I'm kind of curious to see if it does anything.
This hurts my soul, this whole conversation. I grew up in the South where tea was only meant to be drank one way, ice cold and sweet.
Sweet.
It is diabetes in a cup.
Oh, yeah.
They call it table wine where I come from, and it should be thick enough with sugar to hold the knife up.
Yeah.
At a proper sweet.
We used to have a barbecue joint around here, and we're not in the South, but they had a sweet tea called Type 2.
And oh, I gotta try that.
It was really good, but you knew you were in trouble because if you'd eat the barbecue, it just tasted like tea. And I was like, "Oh, how much sugar's in the barbecue?"
Where are we going? Because Nick and I are making a field trip plan.
Well, so unfortunately, they turned into just a catering business, so they don't even have the barbecue joint anymore. It's just catering. Boo. So
that's just criminal.
Okay. Yeah, because it was amazing, and they were always busy. So I don't know why, but I don't know.
Okay, that is unacceptable. And if you like your own tea and coffee or hot chocolate at home, we are affiliated with the coffee brand Coffee, made and brewed in America. So if you want to support local businesses, this is your way. Use the code PODCASTGRUNTS, and you can help keep the lights on. These episodes aren't free to produce, and we appreciate your patronage. And with that sponsorship out of the way, let's start talking about the Kickstarter that brought us here. So I understand you like puppies.
Love puppies.
Make them grow up and eat people.
Big 116-pound fluffy puppy upstairs. So love puppies.
Husky?
A Newfie.
I don't know what those look like. I'm going to have to Google that. Nick, ask him comic questions while I Google a Newfoundland.
It's the Nana dog from Peter Pan.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. They look like, I'm tracking.
Bears. They just look like bears. It's just a bear. it's just a big friendly bear.
Really big dogs.
Yes. The one dog I would like to get is the Russian caucus dog, which is the one that they believe some of the war dogs in a lot of the sci-fi, or excuse me, a lot of the fantasy are based off. Because these dogs will hunt bears in packs.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
They are like Cujo
hunting bears.
Yeah,
I've seen a few like. Isn't there like a also like a Tibetan Mastiff that's also used for
similar
like
similar
bears or something?
Yeah, depending where you go in the world that has bears and people want to hunt them.
Yeah,
there's a dog for that.
Yeah, you need something done. There's a dog for that.
That's right. It's an easy button. Woof woof. That was easy.
All right, Nick, let's start talking comics. All right, so first off, you were here last time with the Kickstarter for the Lycan, Solomon's Odyssey graphic novel. Mm-hmm. So you're back again with more from that universe. So what have you added to the world? And well, first off, I guess we should ask for an overview.
Sure. So the general rundown, the elevator pitch for Lycan Solomon's Odyssey is that it's the story of the world's first werewolf, and it's a mix of horror, mythology, adventure, and a little bit of history. The first book in the series was all about the origin story. So it's setting up the world, setting up the situation, you know, getting you introduced to these characters. And then the second book in the series, and each book after that, sort of moves a little bit forward through time and to different regions and goes into different regional mythologies and monsters and folklore. So the second book went into Arabic mythology, folklore, monsters, and then also opened the world up to magic. The third book that's on Kickstarter, which is launching... Well, it depends on when this comes out, but as of the time of recording, it launches tomorrow. That one, the way I describe it, is H.P. Lovecraft meets Gilgamesh. That one's sort of like Sumerian times, and it opens it up to like cosmic horror and gods and things like that as well.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I enjoyed the first two.
Thank you.
Because I don't think I got... I wasn't able to jump on the first issue when it came out because I didn't know about it. And then we interviewed you. The issue two was coming out. It was on crowdfunding.
Yeah, I can't remember if we did the interview during the Kickstarter or before it, but yeah, the last time I was on the show, we were doing the Kickstarter for the second book in the series.
Right. Yeah. So you talked about all the mythologies you were going to be doing. I was like, oh man, I got to get in on this.
So this is launching on March 1st.
Yes.
All right. I can see what I can do for you. Move it up a little bit.
No, no worries. And it runs till March 31st. Which is my birthday, and I'm definitely not going to milk that for all it's worth. Wink, wink.
Absolutely. You're just going to be, you know, same old, just like you do every year.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not going to call my family up and be like, hey, yeah, thank you for wishing me a happy birthday. Have you backed Kickstarter? Oh, okay. Maybe you should love it a little more.
No pressure.
No pressure at all.
I absolutely love the art in this. So
thank
you. And
so
that works for my colorblind eyes, so I'm digging it.
So that cover came in today. And that one is done by Maria Wolf, if you're familiar with her work at all. I actually met her at Baltimore Comic Con through another friend of mine. So she does a lot of werewolf related stuff. And so it was sort of like a match made in heaven. And I just got that cover done today. And it was fantastic. Super happy.
Yeah. It's good art.
Yeah. And that cover is actually going to be in terms of the Kickstarter is a store exclusive cover. So if you like that cover and you want to get that cover, tell your local comic shop to back the Kickstarter. And then there you go.
And then there you go.
There you go.
And then you got a cool cover. What's the other cover? Do we have a picture of that?
Yes. I sent all three covers over. So that's the other variant that came in. That one's from Matthew Sutton. So that's the variant cover. I'm probably going to modify it a bit before it actually goes to print, where I will shift that picture down a bit. So that way it doesn't cover up the wolf's face quite so much.
Yeah. Really get more of that monster.
Yeah. But for right now that one came in.
You got today plenty of room too.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got room in the bottom there where you could probably take it down where the bottom of the guy's with the hood. Because you're still going to have the main central image, you're going to have the background images, and you're going to really get that monster in the background.
100%.
Yeah, that's a good call. Yeah, I dig that. So it's just going to be the two covers? Oh, no. Here we go.
Three. So there's more. This is the main cover. This one's done by Christian DeBari. Now, he's the one cover artist that we've used on each of the books. Matthew Sutton, the one that did the last one we just looked at, he did the variant covers for the second book. And then Marie Wolf is obviously a new cover artist that we've put on this project. But yeah, this is Christian DeBari, and this is the main cover for this book.
I see, and that's what I like about DeBari's work.
He froze. He definitely looks like you should, you know, give him a T-bone and take him home because he's cuddly.
Yes, very cuddly. But part of some love. Yeah, he just yeah. Well, he needs a chew toy. Is really what he needs. So,
all right, Nick, you're back. Welcome back.
I'm back. Hey, thanks. Yeah. Pleasure to be here. You know, it's been so long. No, but I was talking about Dabari's artwork and how he's very masterful in his use of the blacks, positive, negative space. Especially, I'm looking at these skulls. I mean, the werewolf is cool as hell. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
The detail in the skulls is just like that. My eye went. I looked at the werewolf. I'm like, oh, what's he standing on? And I'm like, oh wow, check out these badass skulls.
Yeah,
it's just highly detailed work.
Yeah, Christian. The way I found Christian was actually a friend of mine had met him at a convention, and he does all kinds of different horror stuff. Like I know he has a series called Tales in Technohorror, and like yeah, as you said, he just has so much attention to detail, but it's like all the good. Creepy, gory detail that he.
Oh yeah! Really, if I had this as a poster in my room, I'd scare the shit out of myself.
So when can we buy the plushie doll to scare the shit out of him some more?
So
we have to talk to Carissa Grant. She's the master of the plushies.
Okay. Yeah. Well, so I don't have a plushie, but this Kickstarter has crochet werewolves.
Ooh!
Well, it freaks crochet out if you put it in their room and they just move it around while they're sleeping.
Yeah. I think they're called
messed up elf.
There you go.
Yeah.
The elf on the shelf. This is werewolf in the house.
I'm trying to think what rhymes with werewolf.
Wolf on the.
I got nothing.
Lichen on the Dyson.
Yeah, there you go.
Put it on your,
your Roomba.
Lichen on the Roomba, just driving around.
Yeah, I dig it. I'm down for this. 100%.
Call it the lyrical lichen and set it on your guitar case. There you go.
Okay. There you go. But yeah, no. So the plushie hadn't crossed my mind, but I did 27 shows last year. I went to 27 events or conventions, which I don't recommend doing so many. I always ran into crochet people, like people who were selling crochet stuff, and they were always so popular. And so I did a show. It was a horror show in New Jersey. And I said, hey, would you be interested in like partnering up and making some crochet werewolves? And she was like, yeah. So then, yeah. So she came up with these little crochet werewolves and there's like three different. Now the actual Kickstarter, like in the main rewards, it's like a 6-inch brown little crochet werewolf. But you know, in the add-ons, you could upgrade to a bigger one if you wanted a 10-inch or an 18-inch one. And as they get bigger, they get like more detail and different colors and stuff that.
That's pretty cool.
All right.
It's strange the things that will actually sell, you know, because I noticed that too at conventions, like the handmade art, the crochets, the plushies, the guys that do like custom Legos.
The custom Lego thing. Those booths are always just packed with people. There was a guy who he does custom fangs. So like you get there and he puts the plaster mold in your mouth and you come back later and he gives you your set of fangs. But he makes, I guess, all these different stuffed bears, but they have horror faces sewn onto them. So it's like Sam from Trick or Treat. the Terrifier, or it's like all these other things. So he buys these sort of plastic faces of like different horror guys, and then he sews them onto the bears, and those things sold like crazy because he had little ones that were like $70, and then he had big giant ones that were like $400, and he was selling a bunch of all of them. And I was like, man, days.
I'm glad Stabby's not on this episode, otherwise she's gonna be tracking that guy down, and then my bank account's gonna go.
Fair. So I won't say his name then because he's easy to find. So.
Oh my God, what's his name?
Horror Show Jack.
You're gonna regret this.
But yeah, it's all these different like styles of fangs from movies, so you could pick the style you want. And then do a little plaster mold right there on the spot.
Sometimes the creative merch is the stuff that wins. I remember I went to RavenCon. That's when I realized that taking that much of my anxiety meds so I can deal with crowds again. Apparently the doctors are like, you need a liver, please don't do this again. But while I was there, there's this lady. Yeah, who needs a liver? There was this lady there that wrote like YA vampire stuff. Mm-hmm. So she had her husband make stakes, like, you know, you'd stab somebody with. And she turned one into a pencil. She had some as like smaller versions that you could put as like legitimately like tiny little earrings.
Okay.
It's just all versions, like all of the merch was her husband was making it because he was a carpenter, and it was just stakes that were carved, and which was kind of cool. And then it had her name like burned into the wood, her name in the bookers.
Oh, they got classic monsters too on the teddy
bears. Yeah, yeah, they got the classic ones too. Yeah, they have all cut, like they have, I mean, they got, you know, Freddy and Jason, all that stuff too. And then I know they had, I saw the Swamp Thing, the Mummy, the I don't think I saw the Wolfman, but I saw Frankenstein as well.
So no, there's the Wolfman.
Was there a Wolfman?
Yeah, right next to the Creature of the Black
Lagoon. Creature of the Black Lagoon was there. Yeah. Yeah, he was.
Nosferatu.
He was across, he was across from me. And yeah, he was a hoot.
they got the Fly.
Did they? Oh, he didn't have that at the show. That's
Yeah, it's a new one. And then he puts them on black and white teddy bears, and then the whole color scheme of the mask is black and white. That is just genius.
Mm.
And Oogie Boogie.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oogie Boogie. Yeah, yeah.
Nightmare. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one that Marissa would want. And
I was gonna say I've seen a lot of Nightmare Before Christmas stuff over the last year. I did two or three shows that had Chris Sarandon and Oogie Boogie. I can't remember the guy who plays Oogie Boogie, but yeah, like I just kept running into those guys. I was like, man, Nightmare's real popular right now. It shows, I guess.
So if you could be a werewolf, would you take the chance to be all wolfed out and have some fun, hunt some rabbits?
Oh yeah, 100%. Although I guess it depends on the variety of werewolf. Cause if it's like the True Blood version of werewolf, it's pretty boring. Because it's just a wolf. Like it's literally just a wolf. But if it's more like
Cujo version?
Cujo version is just a big dog with rabies, right?
Yeah.
Don't ruin it. Jeez, spoilers.
I was going to say, like, and I know the movie's not very good, but I've always dug the style of the Van Helsing werewolves. Like, those are pretty sweet looking.
Yeah.
Or dog soldiers. That's my favorite werewolf.
Love that freaking movie that is, like, the best. And the soldiers, and they're like, this isn't real. Stop messing with us. We're just in training. Yeah.
That's my favorite werewolf movie, and I get crap about it every once in a while because I'm like, no, man, like it's a really good, you know, simple story with good characters that aren't like tropey. They're just they feel like people, and I'm like, and it's good stuff.
Whoever wrote that script understood the average Joe that's in a rifle company, or you know, just the average military junior enlisted is like, I didn't want to be here. Nick and I joke all the time that the most army movement in Star Wars is when they're on the Death Star, and the soldiers look and see him, like, nope, not dealing with it. Turn around and go right back. Must be a drill.
That was drill.
That's the most army scene in the whole movie, and it's probably unintentional.
That was definitely two PFCs, two private first classes that got stuck on guard duty on Saturday night.
And they're like, no problem. I ain't doing this.
I didn't see nothing.
They're like, I just married the stripper and she loves me. And now I can't be with her right now because I got guard duty.
I got a land speeder. I had a
40% interest.
I just got a moisture farmer thing. So,
all right. So you'd be a werewolf with the right universe rules because some of them are boring and some of them.
Yeah.
A little psychotic. So, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say so. Ones that look like it's the most painful thing in the universe to transform, I'd rather not. I'd rather just black out and then wake up and, you know, hunt rabbits and deer and stuff.
Like the early 2000s, I wrote a story that had a lycanthrope.
Okay.
And he owned a bar. It was like modern day times. So we're talking about 2003. And the name of the bar was called Hair of the Dog.
That's good.
Which I laughed every time I saw that. And he was best friends with a vampire who was actually Vlad Dracul. He just went away for a while, got into like tech companies.
Mm-hmm.
And his goal is to walk in the daylight. So he's like, he was doing stuff with like nanotechnology that could generate a field around his body and stuff. And I just put them in stupid adventures.
Sure.
And they would go back and forth of like what they're doing in modern times to when they first met. And
that sounds like fun. I would read that.
I like werewolves. It's a fun world to play in if you do it right.
Yeah.
And obviously you're doing it right.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. That's the thing about with werewolves anyways, in terms of like culture, history or whatever, there's such a spectrum in terms of like what they look like, what they do, how they interact with stuff, like how much Are they in control when they change? My plan eventually is to have like all the different types of werewolves that you see in movies and whatnot have like also exist in the same universe eventually down the road. And it exists on a spectrum. Like on the one end of the spectrum, you've got True Blood werewolves, which is just literally a wolf. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you have something like the Supernatural TV show werewolf, where it's just like a person with some teeth and claws. So it's like almost all human and then almost all wolf. And then mine, I think, is like dead center of the middle, where it's still humanoid, but it's also very wolf-like and, you know, can do all the normal wolfy stuff that you expect of a werewolf.
Yeah, I like the Van Helsing ones like you do. Big fan of American Werewolf in London.
Yes.
And the Underworld, where the older the werewolf is, the more they can control it.
Yeah.
When they change and they can be their persona as a human can also come through. They like have more control of the werewolf. I thought those stories were pretty cool too.
Yeah.
Because that's a werewolf that can think would scare the hell out of me.
Yeah. So the style, when we were originally designing the werewolf in the first book, I gave the artist like a bunch of different samples. I was like, take this from this one. Cause I Frankenstein everything together. Like when I make recipes, I do the same thing. It's like, I like this from this recipe and this from this recipe. So it's like, I
we
like
call that you're measuring with our heart in this house. Okay. Measure with your heart.
Okay. Well, so like with the werewolf, it's like, I like the ears from this design and I like the eyes from this design and I like the nose and the teeth from like this one. So it's sort of this hodgepodge, but most of it came from the Van Helsing design. And then I guess his name was, it's William from the Underworld series. The one, like the oldest, the first werewolf, sort of like that was the most of the blend, I would say, between
Michael
those two.
Sheen played him, I think.
No, Michael Sheen played, like the main Lycan in the first movie. William is, you never see what William looks like because he's always stuck as a werewolf. That's in the second one. Cause his brother is like the one old vampire who gets some werewolf blood and then he's got big bat wings and stuff like that.
Yeah. The Scottish with the Scottish accent.
Yes. Yeah. The Corvinus brothers. But yeah, that guy with the Scottish accent, it doesn't really fit for the region that he was in, but whatever. And his dad has like an English accent. So it's like, okay, whatever.
Well, Sean Connery played a Spaniard once in a small little independent movie called Highlander.
Yeah.
Probably nobody's ever seen it or heard of it. Nobody's ever seen it.
It's fine. Yeah, it's fine.
I like the Highlander's a good one. There could be only one. If you ever have twins, this is the way you figure out how you're paying for college because everyone stresses that out. You put a sword in between them, stick them in the crib. The last man standing gets the college certificate.
True. Call it the quickening.
Who wants it more?
That's right.
That's right.
Who's going to be a doctor? We're going to find
out. Who's going to work for the garbage man? I joke, but the garbage man makes decent money.
No, those guys make as much as doctors.
They actually make pretty damn good money.
They make pretty damn good money. Now I'm thinking about, like, man, why'd I go to college?
As a garbage man, you don't say garbage man. What you really say is I'm a sanitation engineer. Waste management.
Right.
Because when you say waste management or sanitation engineer, we're conditioned to think, oh, is he really that or is he in the mob?
And then when they talk about ghost busting and the Ghostbusters, like instead of paranormal, what they say, paranormal investigations and eliminations, mm-hmm. I'd be like, I'm sanitation investigations and eliminations.
Yeah.
There you go. We've got a plan for our next job, Nick. We're gonna set this up. All right. So, what do you think makes your werewolf different than everything else that's out there?
So, in terms of what's different about the werewolf itself. So the origin is a little different from most of the other werewolf lore that I've seen in terms of it's more of a Faustian deal, which is not like an original idea, but I haven't seen it with a werewolf. And then the entity or creature, whatever you want to call them, that sort of sets up that deal. And I haven't put that in the books yet, but it is something I haven't seen in pop culture or anything like that. It looks like a demon and they call it a demon, but it's not a demon. It's something very different. When in a later book, we're going to go more into the backstory of like that and the people and the race and all that stuff and where they come from and how they got started. And that again, every book is to sort of build out the universe and like make it bigger and bigger and bigger without actually making the story bigger. The world gets bigger, but the story is still like contained and sort of focused. In terms of what else is, you know what? I would say the other thing that's different. Oh, I can't say it because it's a spoiler. There is something that I think is very different between this iteration of a werewolf and most of what I see as werewolves, but I haven't shown it yet in the books. I'll give you a hint and I will say the Incredible Hulk. That's all I can say.
So what you're saying based on what you wrote in the side chat is bleep, bleep, bleep.
Yes.
Oh, basically that, right?
Yeah.
Don't worry, Nick is not allowed to edit this, so he can't bleep us out. We're good.
And if you would have gave me that spoiler, I'd have been mad as hell, dude. Because I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, I was gonna say I try because especially when I do shows, people start asking questions. Like people will buy the book on the first day, and then they'll come back on the second or third day and start asking questions. I'm like, okay, how much can I tell you without ruining? Because I have the whole thing figured out from start to finish of the series, so. I was on another show and they asked me, where is he going to be or which book does this time period take place? And I was like, oh, that sounds like book 13 or 14. Not that he'll be there, but that time it's like, they were like, wow, that's kind of weird that you know exactly when it's going to happen. I was like, yeah, no, I got the whole thing mapped out. It's just a matter of now they got to come out. And it takes a little bit for those books because each book I write tends to get a little bit longer and a little bit longer. The first and second book in the series were 72 pages. 60 of it is story. The third book is 90 pages of story with 6 pages of extras. And then the fourth book, which is written and being edited right now, that one's 104 pages, or is it 108?
This is going. So yes. All right. So how many book arc do you have right now so far? Obviously there's more room to come and grow, but.
Do you mean like what's planned or what's out right now?
What's planned?
15 books in the series.
Is that definitely an end point for you there, or is it potential to keep going?
Technically, it could keep going, but I think that'll be the end point. There are other, like, different genre and books that I'd like to do at some point. But this story I see is, I think the story should end at 15. At least the way that I have it ending, I think that should be the end to it. It could keep going, but I think it would just be doing it a disservice at that point in terms of now you're just kind of stretching it too thin. It's like the TV show Supernatural. Like
there was a real season 13.
Yeah. But they kept on stretching it and going. It's like, okay. I mean, look, I love these characters. I love being around you, but
no, you're wrong, sir. Every TV series needs at least one Disney World episode and at least one musical. It is required by law.
Sammy!
Yeah. So yes. When this
actually, series... you know what, Nick? Now that you say that, you kind of look a little bit like Bobby. A little bit.
Just a little bit. Bobby's I'm getting there. I just don't have the ponytail yet.
It's true.
You're a little skinny.
You get the trucker hat, you get some flannel, and you're good to go.
Dude, that's going to be my Halloween costume. And you're like, who are you? Just some redneck up in the mountain? And they're like...
Idiots.
Yes, but I'm a particular redneck in a mountain. A
particular one, yeah.
You idiots.
Sure, then you just look at him and be like, you sure got a party mouth. All right, so.
That's the Appalachians. That's
my neck of the woods, okay? Right. That's my people.
It was me and Mountain Pays Ranger School walking up and down the TVD, you know, one, and the RRIs would play the banjo. All of us have seen that movie.
Let them know that most of the Shenandoah Mountains that they think about for West Virginia from that song are actually in Virginia.
Yep.
So you're doing about a book a year. So basically what you're telling me is by the time this kid can drive, you'll be ready to do something else.
Yeah. Well, so if the books start to get to a point where they're paying for themselves and like I'm evening out on them, that's when I'll probably start looking into starting some of these other series that I have planned. It's just a matter of right now, because I pay for everything out of my own pocket. Right. It gets to be very expensive when you're the writer because I'm the cheapest guy on the team. So, and as the books get longer, the books get more expensive. So if we get to a point where the books do start to even themselves out, then I'll start to look into starting some of these other series up, which are very different from this one. So.
So what you need to do is add a tip jar to your website, which is like lichen.com, I think.
Lichen, my website, with money.
That's right.
Right. So you can throw you a couple bones to help, you know, figure out what it costs per panel, and people can start donating per panel. Like,
there you go.
There you go. Help push the story forward.
I haven't figured that out, how much it is per panel. But I know, I do know when I tell people how much a book costs, they're like, yeah, that's a lot more than I thought it was going to be. I was like, yeah, no.
Dude, I told JR how much it costs, and he was like, I didn't know it was that much. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
He was bored. Or we were bored in between projects, and he's like, let's just write a comic. You could do this. It'll be fun. It doesn't take that much. I'm like, okay. My computer was like down, so I was doing it all by hand, but comics, obviously, you know what the outlines look like.
Yeah.
And so I sent it to him. I'm like, okay, this is exciting. Let's get this in print. And he's like, well, you got an extra insert. I don't remember what the number was at the time. It's gone up because inflation.
Sure.
He's like, you got an extra couple thousand laying around. I'm like, no, why? He says, because that's about how much this would take to cost to produce.
Well, and that's the thing too. I've learned to do so many aspects of what I call the assembly line of making a comic. I mean, I'm an artist. I've learned how to letter. I've learned how to write. I haven't learned how to color yet. I've tried. It escapes my wheelhouse. So, okay. I know I'm going to be paying like $40 to $75 a page on the colors, depending how good, or if that colorist is his name. Like if I'm getting Alex Sinclair, I'm paying at least $80.
Yeah.
You know, but he was coloring for Jim Lee's X-Men. No, he was doing Batman. Anyway.
Okay.
So like, if I'm going to pay for those guys, so like my artist rate depends. If I really love the project, I'll drop it down to, I don't know, I can't believe I'm putting this on the air, about $50 a page.
Okay.
Which is pretty cheap. I'm like competing with guys that live in Brazil.
Yes. So,
I know, because I hire those guys.
Yes. So,
they're quick, they're fast, and American money just makes them kings over there. So, you know, so I'm saving at least between $50 and $125, $150 a page if I was paying myself, you know. And if I wrote it, well, I just saved myself $25 a page, you know, and that's just for a 22, 24 page floppy. And then the lettering, well, I saved myself $10 a page on that.
Yeah.
Because I got all the software and I learned how to do it.
But there's something called the cost to bullshit ratio or the noise to bullshit ratio. So it's like, yeah, I could do it myself, but like how much of the time could be better spent doing something else? And it's a constant juggling act when you're a project manager, which I've learned doing the anthologies. But so speaking of your comic, your graphic novel, you're doing about one a year. Are you going to be kickstarting every one of them? You're going to be coming back every year. Is that what your plan is?
Yeah. So it's getting to the point, because the books are getting longer, that I don't think a book is going to come out every year. Eventually, now it's starting to look more like a year and a half. So there might not be a book out next year, but because of the production costs, I'm thinking I might just do a Kickstarter every year anyways, just to help offset those costs. Right. And you know, my goal was always have the books completely finished by the time the Kickstarter launches. And I did that for the first two books. And the third book is mostly done. It's not all the way done, because I wanted to build some trust and be like, hey, you know, this is a safe bet. If you back it, you're going to get it. And at this point, you should realize I'm too deep in the hole. So it's going to happen. it's happening.
This is happening.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, sorry. So I was going to say, we are going to do a Kickstarter for the fourth book. It'll probably be next year in September. And then we'll see when that book actually comes out. Cause production, I talked to the art team, cause the fourth book is written, it's being edited, but I talked to the art team and they said they weren't really going to start working on it until after summer because of their other projects that they're working on. So production's not going to start till after summer, and the book is like 108 pages. Well, so I'm going to guess it probably won't be done till early 2026 would be my guess.
And I love that too. Book showed up, when your first two issues showed up, I completely forgot I backed it. Because I do that. I like that little Christmas present to myself, you know?
Oh, yeah, so, I guess same thing. I'll be like, what is this and when did this happen?
Yeah, so it shows up. It's like, it's somebody from Dennis Robinson, and I'm like, huh? And then like I'm having to go through all the monkeys in my brain are going through the warehouse trying to pull out that file.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, the werewolf dude, give it here.
Yep.
Come on. I won't touch it. Give me. You know, and I sat down and read them.
So obviously that has to be the frustrating part of you guys' line of work in the comics versus like, if I want to do something, like the only thing stopping me is button chair time, right? Like I get in the chair, I write the words, and then as soon as I'm done, I can send it off to an editor and you know, assuming the editing doesn't take too long, because that's sometimes out of our hands, and assuming that the cover artist doesn't take too long, I could reasonably finish a book and within a month have it out to you, the reader, right? You guys don't have that. Your process is a lot slower.
We have multiple editors too in the process. You have the script editor, you have the art director, and then you have the EIC, you know, who's going to go over all of it.
Yeah.
And that's usually when they want to make big changes.
Yeah. Well, so I look at it as like a conveyor belt, like, because the artist starts. The colorist can't get started until they get pages from the artist. And then the letterer can't do anything until they get pages from the colorist. So it's always going to be the artist is out ahead in front, and then the colorist is somewhere behind them, and then the letterer is somewhere behind them. And so that's why usually the way I do it is when they start production on a book, I start writing the next book. And then by the time they get done with production on that and they start on the next one, it's like, okay, time to start writing, you know, the one after that. Because usually my schedule is wonky, where I usually write the books what I do for a normal job is I'm a consultant and I make animated propaganda videos for internal use at companies. And the nature of that is I'll make a video.
Propaganda, they're motivational videos. Get the terminology right.
So when I give them a video, sometimes they won't give me feedback for like 3 weeks, and we're still charging them for that time. So I have nothing to do for 3 weeks. So it's like, well, this is a perfect time for me to write a script. And so I'll start working on the book and just work on it that way and get chunks of it done, you know, as I go. With this last book, it was funny because it wasn't writer's block. It was just, I was having trouble motivating myself to sit down and do it. And then I had a bit of a mental breakdown. And then I was like, oh, now all of a sudden I have all this time. And I just cranked out like 70 pages in like 4 days.
Mess will do that to you.
So
have you thought about, obviously, you know, there's lag time on your production that's just out of your control, unless you're independently wealthy enough to pay these people to do it all at once, right?
And
I mean, that's the joke, how you get, you know, rich in certain industries. You can be a millionaire by starting off as a billionaire, right?
Yeah, you start off rich.
And you get poor at the end.
And we're not rocking that Eric July money either. So,
Have you thought about releasing this universe in other mediums, maybe some short stories, some novellas, novelettes, that sort of thing, to keep the interest up in the lag time? Cause then all you need is the cover art.
Yeah. So I've thought about that in the sense of, you know, what if I did short stories of like the in-between, like what happens in between books with like different characters, even maybe. But it then comes back down to me having time, and I just don't have a ton of time.
It always comes down to that.
Yeah. Cause like I said, I did 27 shows last year on top of my 40-hour-a-week job and a podcast. So like there were months at a time where I did not have free time. It was work all week, go to a show, work all week, go to a show. And it was like 3 straight months of that. And then I'd have a month off. And then it was like another 3 straight months of that. So there just wasn't time. Cause like, you know, in that sort of a schedule, I get done work at 5, 6, 7 o'clock, depending on the project. I don't really want to like sit down and try and figure out how to write something. I'm like, I just kind of want to not do anything for like 2 seconds.
Sit down, what you're telling me
is, that schedule of work con is totally unrelated to your high cholesterol and all the food you had to eat while traveling.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm an introvert by nature. So the other bad thing about doing cons is, well, I'm a little bit of a sociopath. Yeah. Well, I'm also a sociopath. So I can just pretend like I'm very outgoing and like, you know, an extrovert. But the moment the con is over, like on any particular day and it's time to go, I don't want to see people. I don't want to talk to people. My emotional batteries are just, they're empty. I got nothing left. They're like, oh, you want to come out for karaoke or something? I'm like, no. I don't want to see you till tomorrow. And then just recoup as much as I can and then come back and then put on the face again and do that. And, you know, I say put on the face, but you know, you do meet a lot of really cool and interesting people at conventions. But again, it's one of those things where you're trying to be a salesman and you're saying the same elevator pitch like a thousand times. And it just drains your batteries by the end of the day. And then you get home after three straight days of that and you go back to work for a whole week and then, you know, rinse and repeat. So it's just one of those things where, yeah, there are all these things that would be really cool to do. I just don't have the bandwidth and the energy to do them.
And the con circuit is rough, especially that amount. Like I used, when I was doing the con circuit, I would top it off at 10 because I just wouldn't have any more juice in the tank. And if it was a 3-day con Friday, I know I'm not going to get any sales because everyone's just kind of looky-looing.
Yeah.
Cool. Got it. I've been there myself on the other side of the table. All I want to do on that first night, I'm going to get me a really good cheeseburger. I'm probably going to have a couple of beers. I'm going to try and get to bed early because Saturday is going to get crazy.
Yep.
You know, so you're on your feet for 10 to 12 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you're making on average like $3 an hour if you broke it down.
Yeah.
You know, and then after that, this is why I pick hotels that have a jacuzzi.
Mm-hmm.
So for Saturday night, I want a steak.
Okay.
With a giant baked potato and an old fashioned.
Okay. Then
I want to go back to my hotel.
Yeah.
And I want to get in the jacuzzi for an hour and Calgon, what, you know, take me away. And then I'll go upstairs, have another old fashioned on the way back to my room.
Okay.
And then I'm done for that. And then Sunday, sober as a judge, try and get what sales I can on that last day.
Yep.
And then I pack up my car and then I'm driving anywhere between an hour to 8 hours to get back to my house.
Yep.
And then I don't want to do nothing for 48 hours. I just want to just veg.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to know, is that similar to the experiences you have doing 27 cons in a year or events? Not maybe the steak and the meals and all that, but
sure. Well, so the way I do cons is I won't go to a con unless I know somebody who lives in that vicinity. So that way I save on the hotel cost because, man, oh, days, is that at. Like last year we did Richmond Galaxy Con, and it was a fantastic show. And I got to meet, who's the guy who played Gimli? John Rhys Davies. He came around every table at that con and wished every vendor good luck before the show started. Like, what a nice guy.
I've heard that about him.
And like, so that show was amazing. And I, you know, made a good amount of money. But the problem was we booked an Airbnb. And after you take out the Airbnb and the table cost, it wasn't really a whole lot of money left over. So now I have a buddy who lives in Richmond. So now I won't have any Airbnb costs. So now it's like, okay, well now, you know, there's more profit or at least a, you know, a better ratio or whatever. So for me with cons, it was Friday and every show is so different. They're like snowflakes, man. Like Friday, I had some shows where Fridays were the busiest day in terms of like for me making sales. Some shows was Sunday. Usually Saturday is the busiest in terms of foot traffic, but you know, whether or not that translates into sales, I have a very weird niche product where you have to be into comics and werewolves. It's like a very small Venn diagram for people.
Wait. There are people that don't like werewolves? The hell's wrong with them?
Vampire fans. I've had a lot of people stop by the table and I'm like, do you like werewolves? They're like, I like vampires. I said, okay, well, I don't have those in the story just yet. Someday, but not yet.
I bet like, those are the people that kick puppies or something. All right. So this is the part where I've got to interrupt and I have to remind you, dear listener at home, that the there's not a commercial airing right now at the 53 minute mark because one, we've been jabbing, and two, Dennis was kind enough to sponsor this episode. So we're going to link to his Kickstarter where you can go check it out and back it. So if you want to help out the podcast, go help him out because we all rise together, right? Like undead zombies. Do you have those yet?
Ghouls were the closest thing. That was in the second book. Not quite zombies, but
we'll take it.
Ballpark.
Ghouls.
Yeah. Close enough for government work.
But I will say, so my one difference between you, your jacuzzi story, I did because, so my company, they give us a wellness bonus every year. What we're supposed to use on like wellness. So I bought a Shiatsu foot massager that I take with me to shows. And then at the end of the night, I have it in the hotel room and I literally just get a little foot massage. And oh my God, does it make a huge difference at the end of the day to just be like, okay, 15 minutes, just get that massage. And then, cause I stand the whole time. I don't sit.
Yeah. Me too. Even like as an artist, like I also do commissions and I'll do them there at the con. So I have my little travel drawing table, and I'll, when I stand it up on the table, my height, I'm able to draw. And then I talk to people. I was watching an interview. I talked to Neil Adams and he goes, yeah, I don't, back in the day, I would never sit down during a con. I would draw and talk to these people on, yeah, on getting things done.
It's easier to make like a, not a connection, but like to get somebody's attention if you're at eye level, as opposed to if you're hiding behind the table or whatever.
Yeah. That's one of the biggest con mistakes, especially with new artists or anybody on that side of the table that's new. They just, and most of us are introverts, you know, most of us don't like talking to people. That there's a reason why we do the mediums that we do. It's because we don't like communicating with people face to face. But I'm an introvert, extrovert, sort of, or maybe I'm just a sociopath. I don't know. I can fake it. But but being at, I noticed a big difference from when I first started doing cons and I would just sit behind the table and just kind of hide there and let them, you know, look over my stuff and then walk away, compared to when I would kind of be a carnival barker. Or a circus barker, you know, I'm like, hey, come over here and check out my stuff. Hey, flip through my portfolio. Hey, these are the, I'm not trying to sell you anything, but just to make you aware, these are the prices. This is what we've got going on. You know, if, let me know if you have any questions, I'll be right here. And I just take my little step to the left and then I just start doodling. And then that gets their attraction. Like, oh, well, can you draw this? Can you draw that? I'm like, yeah, for the right amount of money, I'll draw anything.
Yeah.
So speaking of drawing, do you actually do any of the art, Dennis, or are you strictly the writer?
So I'm strictly the writer on the books because there's not enough time. However, to try and sell things at a con to a more general audience, I did take up painting. I don't paint anything from the book, but I do Bob Ross style paintings of nerdy landscapes. So I have the Death Star in a Bob Ross style, and I have the cabin from Evil Dead.
Dude, where can I buy this shit? Why are you doing this?
Yeah. I'll send you.
You still have the cabin?
Yeah. Well, so I made these paintings, but I can't take the paintings to shows because I didn't know this at the time. Oil paintings have to sit for a year before you can put the final lacquer on. So I used a high def camera and I take pictures of them and then I get prints made. And the camera is so good that I've only had one show so far this year, and it was the first show that I had some paintings out. People would come up and like touch the prints, because all the ridges for the paint and everything are on there. So they're like, is this a painting? And I said, it comes from a painting, but it's not a painting. Because I had Camp Crystal Lake and Spirited Way.
I want to buy that now.
And well, Camp Crystal Lake was one where people weren't really getting it. And Jason is, I painted Jason where he's hiding in the lake. Like you could just barely see his mask and there's like a little shadow, but like, if you're not really looking for it, you probably wouldn't notice it, but
like, where's Waldo of Horror?
Yes, like exactly. And I forget what else I had, I know for the current ones that I came out with, like I said, the Death Star, Evil Dead, Halo.
Halo, go on. Tell me more.
Shadow of the Colossus. Man, I'm trying to think what else. I know Spirited Away, Howl's Moving Castle, and there were some other ones in there. Dude, but I can't remember. But yeah, I'll shoot you some Facebook pictures of the prints that I have. But
what's the Halo scene did you do?
So it's a waterfall where it's got, and then I wanted a scene where it was in nature because, you know, Bob Ross, but also it has the actual Halo up in the background. And so it's some mountains. There's like a thing of light shooting up in the sky. Jaws is another one I did. The orca is sailing into a sunset, and there's a little barrel being like towed towards the boat on the other side of the picture. Nice. But yeah, I don't know exactly where in the Halo game the picture is taken from. I can't remember, but I know it was a waterfall because I was just sort of scrolling through images and I was like, ooh, I like this. I think this would work for a Bob Ross style painting.
I've heard the conspiracy theory that Bob Ross was actually a serial killer and he was just painting where he put the happy little bodies.
That's where all the bodies were. I've heard that story as well.
Is this why you paint, sir?
No. So like I said, the idea behind doing the paintings was just to get more eyes on the table, because at the last con, I only had 4 paintings, but I did have a bunch of people come over and I was like, oh, do you like werewolves? Like, no, I don't give 2 shits about werewolves. I'm looking at these paintings over here. So now I have 12 paintings, and the idea is that I'm going to have a backdrop above the table with the paintings hanging, and I have a sign above it that says, I write werewolf comics, and I paint nerdy little landscapes. So,
dude,
how that goes.
You had me at Bob Ross. You need to get his hair. I mean, I know you can't make it curl, but you could get the wig. I bet.
Well, yeah. So somebody was like, I've had a bunch of people say like, oh, you should do like a live painting at a show. I said, do you know what goes into oil painting? Like, do you know why Bob Ross got cancer? Because of him beating the devil out of the brush and the odorless paint thinner, like him breathing that in because there's no ventilation. Like, you have to have a very specific setup to be able to paint that, or it's going to be very messy.
I feel like being a penciler.
No, yeah, anybody with asthma is going to be hating you if you do a live painting there.
Yeah. So,
All right, so you do create art, which is going to be available on your social media, which we'll link to all of that.
And I think I'm gonna put. I've been debating. You know, I wouldn't mind getting your input on this, your opinion. I've been thinking about adding those paintings as possible add-ons on the Kickstarter. So if somebody wanted to buy them, they could.
Dude. Yeah.
Okay. Because I was like, well, it doesn't really have anything to do with the book. And I'm new to the whole fan art thing because I've never done it. And I know like some people have, like I have a friend who's like, that's immoral and you shouldn't do it. And I'm like, I don't know what I can't do.
Maybe immoral, but still legal.
Yeah. So
maybe we consider it immoral.
Well, they're like, that's somebody else's art that you're copying. I was like, I don't recall the Death Star being painted in Star Wars, but okay, I guess somebody else designed it. And then I took their idea and then reimagined it. But wouldn't that go under like parody, almost like parody rules?
Yeah, it's still an original piece created by you. So that's what sidesteps the fan art laws, because I used to do a lot of fan art and sell prints, and then someone got in my head, like, oh, you shouldn't do that because you're gonna get, you know, you get jammed up by the IP owner.
Yeah.
But I did one of Deadpool holding a baseball bat and then zombie Deadpool biting onto the bat headless. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, and then he's standing on a baseball. And I put a little word balloon on there. It's like, there's a thought balloon that says, say something clever, Wade. And then the word balloon was something clever. Nailed it. And that, I did like 100 print run on that. Sold it for about $10.
Yep.
Sold out.
Yeah.
Hell, one kid brought me a Deadpool comic to sign. I'm like, hey, I didn't draw this. He goes, I don't care. And I'm like, all right, here we go.
So I would suggest that before you sell the originals, get as the highest quality, whatever you got to do, image of that crap.
Oh, yeah.
Sell those as permanent prints on your gallery, because that's the kind of stuff you buy to frame, put in people's work, like as a gift.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
I had a few people stop by, because one of the most comments I got about the paintings was either, A, do you have any more? Because, like, I love these paintings, but, like, I don't want any of these particular four. I want something else that's different. So I would take suggestions. I'm like, okay, I'll add it to the list of, like, things to try out.
Like, that's the kind of thing that would be a heck of a, like, cool gift for the horror fanatic or whatever. Like, anyone that likes the various franchises that you turn into happy little accidents, like, they're going to dig this. Like, I'd totally buy some of those prints.
Okay.
So back to the Kickstarter. Yes, I do think that makes a good stretch goal or individualized plan once you do what you got to do. So what's the base packages, and then what add-ons can people get? Because we're recording this before that website is live, so it doesn't have that yet for the average person. It will at the strike of midnight, so soon-ish from when we're recording. But what can they look forward to with the packages and the add-ons? And
so the base rewards, we have rewards that are as low as $5 all the way up to $1,000. And like the very basic stuff is just, you get the digital copy of the book. That's $5. Cool beans. If you want to get the book itself. So normally I was charging $15 for the other books, but this one is 30% longer. So I upped this price to $20. It's literally the same price per page as the other ones, or right around it, something like that. And then again, a lot of the rewards are similar to the other Kickstarter in terms of like a thank you page, glow in the dark enamel pin, things like that. T-shirt. The art for the T-shirt is actually the one with the skulls with Dabari, but it's like a black and white kind of look to it.
Ooh,
newer stuff that we're adding, though, crochet werewolf, like I told you, resin miniatures of the werewolf, 6-inch resin statue that I'm going to 3D print. The jersey, which I'm actually wearing the jersey for this particular Kickstarter, more of a like a fiery theme. There you go. And you know, you get to, some people just want to die in the next book. That's, you know, one of the tiers. You get to die in the next book. I will get your picture. We will put you in the next book. You will die horribly. And then I will give you a print of your death page. Nice. So those are some of the newer and also like similar rewards. And there's a bunch of different stuff. And I have retailer rewards that are specific for comic shops, you know, where it's like the normal 50-50 split kind of thing. But I give them some extras like mini prints and stuff like that just for, you know, shits and giggles. And then the higher tier rewards, like the new ones that I just had, it's like $800. That's like a catch up if you want to get the other jerseys. You can get the other two jerseys because I only sell those in the Kickstarters. I don't do them anywhere else. And then the $1,000 I call the God tier or the God King tier. It really all it is you get a special credit in the credit section that says God King. That's really, it's more of a for fun. I don't think anyone will back at it, but it's in there. So those are the different types of rewards. Audio commentary where, you know, myself and Charles McFall, we go page by page and we talk about, you know, the different making of stories for that particular page or the thought processes that went into it or the story beats, stuff like that. So we have all kinds of different rewards, you know, all the, like I said, all the way from $5 all the way up to $1,000. It really just depends on what you want to do. And then as far as add-ons, everything that was in any of the previous Kickstarters is available as an add-on. And then as we talk, those paintings, I'll put those in there. And I just actually sent you a Facebook message with them. So JR, if you're curious what I'm
doing. Yeah, he shared them with me right away.
Yeah, I sent them over to in fact, you know, while you guys are talking, so obviously that's what the Kickstarter is going to have as far as backing. Mm-hmm. What about the kind of extras that you're talking about? Do you think you'll be adding some, or do you have to, like, how does that normally work? Do you only add them when you fill the old ones?
What do you mean by the extras?
I think he's talking about stretch goals.
Oh, stretch goals?
There we go.
So I have those planned out. I might tweak them a little bit. Some of them are similar. Let me pull up my list here because I haven't added it on there yet. But so have you heard of Lady Death? I'm sure you guys probably have.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say just about everybody knows Lady Death. But so I take a lot of inspiration from like how he does his stretch goals in terms of like what he does. And so bookmarks, stickers, mini prints, magnets, foil enhancement, unlocking the hardcover. I don't know why this one pops up on so many Kickstarters, but wooden nickel. So that's, I guess, a thing. So, yeah. So, and at first it unlocks at 12K. So we set the goal at 10,000. If we hit 12K, that's the first stretch goal. And then it's $2,000 for each stretch goal after that up till about 20,000. And then it starts to become 5,000. Per stretch goal at that point. All the way, I have them planned all the way up to $100,000 where, you know, it's some 6x9 prints, it's some more stickers, magnets, collector cards, keychains, pens, pencils, you know, all kinds of different stuff.
And if you're watching at home, I'm throwing
Ghost
up
of Tsushima. That was the one I was trying to think of.
I'm throwing up some of the art he sent me, some of the watercolors he's already done. Better than I could do, so no judgment from me.
Well,
I like this one. You can almost looks like the art. You can almost
so see that's the one people kept trying to touch, and they're like rubbing the print. I'm like, yeah, I get that it looks like a painting, but it's not actually a painting.
But it's not.
Yeah,
but it's not the painting.
Well, what's funny with that one? So that's Link's Awakening. It's one of the Zelda games, and one of the comments I got, they're like, "I love this picture, but I hate that game." And I'm like, "Okay, well, I'm sorry."
Reach their own. I get it.
Yeah, whatever.
But yeah, those were. It was Mount Vesuvius.
Oh, I remember. I did Mordor as well.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't have any small pictures of that one though. Like they're all like 30 megabyte images, so I can't send them through Facebook. But I'll make some small ones. I'll send them you guys your way.
Nice.
But yeah, no, they're fun to do, and it's sort of a nice, relaxing way to be able to turn my brain off if I'm thinking about too many things and just sit down and actually just work on something. And, you know, I don't do art on the books, but I, you know, I used to do art and I wanted to have some sort of creative outlet to like show like, no, yeah, I do art too. I just don't do the art on the books. So that's part of also why I'm doing the paintings. And again, to just try and get different eyes on the table and just try and, you know, recoup some costs so I could keep the production on the books going.
Okay. So we've been at it for an hour. We want to make sure we didn't miss anything because when Nick and I get talking about something we're passionate about, sometimes we go far in a field and we forget the topic that brought us here.
No worries.
So was there anything about, well, Nick loves comics. So like he's all about getting nerdy with you about it. in the process, because he'll talk for hours if you let him about the process on the back end about how to make
it. This is true.
Was there anything about the Solomon's Odyssey, the graphic novel about lichens, that we didn't ask that you think we really ought to know?
No, I think we've covered most things. I mean, we didn't get into like specifics of like how ridiculously expensive it is to make comics, but I think by now we know it's very expensive. But as far as, you know, the other thing I guess I'd want to share, just because it's goofy, is that so I made two videos for this particular Kickstarter. The one is the actual Kickstarter video, which is, so if you look at either of the other two Kickstarters, each of these videos is a continuation of a story, like a little side goofy story, like a Lon Chaney. It's like a black and white movie. The first one, he's walking through the woods and it's like late at night. There's a full moon. You hear a wolf howl at the end. The second one, I'm being chained up in the basement by my good man, my servant, I guess, whatever you want to call it. And like, I'm still talking to the audience. This one, I wake up bloody and in tattered clothes in a field or in the woods. And I'm just like acting as if nothing had happened. And then there's a severed hand next to me. And it's like, oh, that's not good. And it's sort of going to that. But when I was making these videos, that one in particular, the lapel mic stopped working. And because I had all this makeup on, I was like, I really don't want to, because I just recorded them last weekend. I also don't have time to then redo all the makeup and put on all that stuff and try and redo the videos. So I dubbed them. So now it feels more like a Godzilla movie in terms of the audio that's on it, where it's like, it doesn't quite match up because I have a lot of audio mannerisms where like words will stutter and things like that. And it's very hard to recreate. But I also did make another separate video where I talk about everything that goes into making the books and the finances of everything and how it's all broken down in terms of, you know, who gets what and, you know, where's the money going? Because I get that question a lot, where it's, hey, so I'm back in this Kickstarter, where does the money go? It's like, well, the books have already been paid for. The simple answer is it comes back to me because I'm immediately just going to go and pay for the next book.
Right.
But they're like, well, you can't say that. It's got to be more complicated. I'm like, okay, fine. And we go into the whole details of like, all right, so this is how much, not specifically, but like, you know, this is what it's, you know, this is going to the artist. This is going to the colorist. This is, and so I made a graph or a pie chart that you like shows like, this is for the artist, this is for the colorist, and so on and so forth. Cause one comment I got with the first Kickstarter, I set the goal at $6,600 and we technically made 10,000, but after bounced credit cards and Kickstarter took their, you know, lump of flesh, it's more like $8,500, which even still people saw that and they're like, oh, your book cost $6,600 and you made $8,500. You made a profit. It's like, no, the first book cost me $22,500 to make. So no, I didn't make a profit from the Kickstarter. And the second
book took a loss.
Yeah. And the second book cost me $23,500. And this one is going to cost me over $30,000 when it's all said and done. You know, when you got to order the Kickstarter rewards and the shipping costs and all that stuff. So yeah. So this one's running me over $30,000. Yep. Cause
cause Nick was quoting comic books, which are shorter than graphic novels. That's why your numbers are so larger. Okay. Now it all makes sense. Okay.
Yeah.
So when
you're doing 66 pages of comic book art,
yeah,
I mean, that's essentially three floppies put together.
Yep.
It gets pricey and it gets pricey quick.
Yep. If they want you to give them a more complicated answer, say, well, it starts with my Swiss bank account.
Yes.
All right.
But I would say that's really the only other thing in terms of like, if you're interested in like the behind the scenes sort of what actually goes into making the comics. Like, so I did make a separate video for that in the Kickstarter, if you want to check that out as well. But other than that, yeah, I think we've kind of covered everything. Unless you guys have more questions for me.
Nick?
I would, but it's going to get into spoiler territory and I like to be surprised when I get book three.
It's fair. It's fair.
Okay. So you've got at least 15 planned. When you do your, hopefully, you know, you can crank it up to two a year. So obviously you get
the issue. Who doesn't have to spare 40 grand laying around?
The issue with that is, so like, I'd like to keep the same team just so that way the art looks the same. I don't know how easy it would be to be able to find another artist that makes it look exactly the same, just because based on the tryouts, everybody's art looked different. And with my team, they can't produce more than they're already producing because they have other projects too. So I don't know how you would even do that where it's like, no, all your time belongs to me. Well, then I have a feeling that you'd just be paying more to get them be like, no, that's all I'm doing now. Sweet. I'm just working on it.
Nick's not telling you, but he's not telling you that maybe he knows a guy that can, break a few kneecaps, motivate people to work harder, work faster. His cousin Two Finger Vinny.
Okay.
Yeah. If you need a freelance Vader type, to get people back on schedule.
All right. So that's the plan. When you're not writing the Lycan Solomon's Odyssey kind of universe, what do you think you'd be doing if you weren't doing this, as far as like for graphic novels?
Well, so I actually have two other books that I want to do. And once these books break even, if that ever happens, the plan is to then start to try and flesh those out. There is a sci-fi series that I would like to do. Have you ever seen G Gundam?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So it's kind of like that, where it's like a universe where everything's kind of crappy, but everyone's really focused on these like robot battles, and they have different tiers. So like at the bottom, it's sort of like BattleBots, where it's just like a remote control. It's a little one. And then you got the ones where it's like Real Steel, where it's like a human sized robot and they fight and they're still remote controlled or whatever. And then you get into the ones where they're piloted and they're, maybe like 15, 20 feet tall, something like that. And then you get into the ones where it's like countries fighting each other for like just deciding, some sort of governance. That's where it's like the 50 foot tall robots and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I have a series that's kind of set in a universe like that called Scrappy, where Scrappy spelled with like the leet speak numbers, about a little girl who sort of, she comes from a very affluent family and she has a little robot helper with her called Scrappy, and she ends up losing her family and then ends up in the muck of the bottom tier of things and sort of learns about robot fighting and like gets into it and sort of has to like build things up from there. Those would be much shorter books than like the Lycan series. Like the Lycan ones, they're very, very long. These ones I think would be much shorter stories, like regular size comics, I would say. And then I kind of want to do a comic series about the podcast, just because I think the ridiculousness of our show would translate well to a comic, like short comics. Those would be two that I think I would probably do if I wasn't, solely working on Lycan right now.
We will link his podcast in the show notes. Speaking of show notes, since we're wrapping up, we're at the hour mark, and I want to have this time to get this all edited because we're going to bump you up in the production schedule. So
thank you. I appreciate that.
People have more time to look at your stuff and hit the buy button. But where can listeners and viewers at home find you? And we will link to the podcast as well.
So you can find me mostly on Instagram these days at World's Most Okayest DM, or you can find me at Hivehead Studios. I post on both of them, basically. So either one is good. You'll find me on either one. My website for the books, hiveheadstudios.com. You can find me on there. I also have a Patreon, patreon.com/hiveheadstudios. Only have one tier. It's $3. You get access to a Discord, and we also do a mostly weekly, depending on how busy I am, podcast, where it's, my buddy describes it as a documentary. We sort of just go in to all the different behind the scenes stuff with, but like the different shows I'm going to and like the different like business aspects of making the comics and like all the weird crazy crap that happens to me, where like we're talking about getting published in Spain, but there were some like questions of if there was some sort of fraudulent thing going on. So you know, all kinds of different stuff. That's mostly where you can find me, and you can listen to the podcast over at Botched, a D&D podcast, all your podcatchers. Our current season is set in the SCP universe, which is like X-Files on steroids. And if you're not familiar with the SCP universe, we actually have an employee orientation video over on our YouTube channel, which gives you all the information you ever need. And it's both informative and hilarious.
Okay. That sounds exciting. And this is the part of the interview, dear listener. Well, hold on first. I forgot to ask. Obviously you back this on Kickstarter, you mail out, you fulfill it. Mm-hmm. If people catch this a year from now, or they mm-hmm. find episode 183 a year from now, where mm-hmm. you're on book, 12, maybe, whatever, I'm big and dreaming big for you, Dennis. Is this available for sale afterwards anywhere else?
Yes. So if you go to hiveheadstudios.com, I have a store. You can buy the books physically or digitally. That's the first or the second book. So, you know, if you wanted to back the Kickstarter and you wanted to get the first two books, you can get them in the Kickstarter. But if you're impatient and you want to get them now, you could go to the website and you could buy them there. And then that'll maybe hold you over until the third book actually gets mailed to you. But you can buy them on the store there physically or digitally. I actually have the first 18 pages of the first book up there for free as a digital sample. When the Kickstarter ends, I'll add a link in the Kickstarter that will redirect to the store, and there'll be like a pre-order link. So if you want to, you know, pre-order it for the whenever they become available, you can do it that way too. But if when you listen to this and you go to the store and the third book is there, you can buy it in there too.
Oh, freaking standing. Do you have any mechanism in your store on your website where people can leave reviews?
I have to double check. I think I do, but I'm not 100% sure.
Well, then, because, you know, not all of our listeners are necessarily comic people or understand the value. Well, we harp on reviews. Sure. So if they wanted to review comics, if they couldn't do it on your website, because, you know, that's a lot of coding. Sure. Where do people go to review comics, especially like indie comics?
So I know for, I mean, I also have the digital books up on Amazon. I really don't like selling the books on Amazon because they take such a dumb amount of money for not really having to do anything. But I know you can review it up there as well. In terms of reviewing it outside of anything, that's something I've actually been interested in trying to figure out, like what's a way for people who back the Kickstarter or people who read the books to then leave reviews where, you know, they're sort of all in one place where people could check them out. So if you find out, feel free to let me know.
I will ask around because I know there are review sites. Okay. I don't know what they're called off the top of my head.
Well, so I know that there are sites that also offer reviews specifically, but they're like, I've seen them anywhere between $100 to $300 for a review. And I'm just like, yeah, no, thank you.
Yeah, that's cool.
Bit rich for my blood. I don't know what sort of pull you have, but that's a lot of money for just a review.
That seems like a lot.
Yeah.
And they're probably going to trash my book anyway.
You never know.
Why would I pay $300 for a negative review? I don't know.
Yeah.
So before we let you go, dear listener, this is where we remind you to please be kind and speak your mind on the reviewing platforms. Your reviews help the right books find the right people, and that includes graphic novels and comic books. So if you know where to review them, great. You can always review it over on Amazon, even if you buy it directly from the author. You can start your own website, review it there, make your own YouTube videos, review it there, whatever you want to do, but share the good word about the content you like. It's the only way to ensure that you get more of it. Because if you don't do your part as a consumer, you can't really complain when you don't get the ending you wanted. And so, you know, if you're not doing your part, dear listener, to share what you like, you can't really complain if you get left hanging. Because, you know, artists got to eat too. Apparently, you can't pay your mortgage on exposure. Funny how that works.
Yeah.
All right. And did I already ask you where people can find you online? I'm pretty sure I did.
Yes. Yes.
I got distracted. I do that to myself all the time. I blame Nick, though. It's really his fault, even when it's not, because that's just how it works in the show.
Hey, I'm gonna give you a piece of life advice that it works for everybody. When in doubt, blame Dennis. It'll serve you well in the long run.
All right. And you can find us, dear listener, on our Linktree, linktr.ee, linktree.ee/Blasters and Blades Podcast. Again, linktree.ee/Blasters and Blades Podcast, where we link to all the things, the bit shoots, the rumbles, the YouTubes, the Twitters, our email, blastersandbladepodcast@gmail.com, for professional purposes only, people. Yes, you, even you, Chuck. We have our Facebook group and Facebook page. And more importantly, we have Madam Savvy Sab's Instagram, Twitter, and email, where you can send all the inappropriate stuff. Yeah, you too. Again, Chuck, really. Stop sending that stuff to me. It's creepy. And with that being said, you can also go to our website at anchor.fm/blasters-and-blades. Again, anchor.fm/blasters-and-blades, where for as little as 99 cents a month, you can also help keep the lights on. Or you can support the show more directly at buymeacoffee.com/author J.R. Handley. Again, buymeacoffee.com/author J.R. Handley. Be sure to put in the comment section of this for the podcast, and I promise I will keep my co-hosts duly caffeinated. They will drink only the finest gourmet coffee brand coffee with the affiliate code Podcast Grunts. They will drink it until it pours out of their eyeballs, because that's how we roll, people.
And we'd be rolling.
And we'd be rolling in the caffeine, man. All right. So thank you for spending some of your precious time with us. For my crazy caffeinated co-host, I am J.R. Hanley, and this was the Blasters and Blades podcast. We'll be back next week at the same time where we'll indulge our love of nerd culture, cheesy jokes, and all things that go boom. All right. Dennis, thank you for coming on. And we're not even blaming you for anything this time.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. It's always good talking to you guys. I had a great time last time. I had a great time this time.
Sounds like a plan, sir. And with that, we are out. Wait for it. You live? Nope.